We're playing the New Zealand rock band The Found on Take It From Us as our theme tune for our mental health radio program. They're a trio of Kiwi musicians, two of whom are mental health consumers. Let's listen to some more of their track, Long Gone. Welcome to Take It From Us, brought to you by Framework and the Like Minds, Like Mind campaign. I'm your host, Sheldon Brown, and Take It From Us is the voice of mental health on Planet FM. And it's here to address stigma and discrimination, reducing stigma and discrimination against people with lived experience of mental distress. Today on Take It From Us, we explore the issues when someone you care about has mental health or addictions problems. For families of loved ones with mental health and or addictions issues, we want to provide some guidance, some tips and suggestions about what to do, where to get help, and how important it is to look after yourselves. And when we say that, it means looking after yourself, pretty much ahead of looking after the loved one who may have the mental health or the addiction issue. Today in the studio, we have Peter Grace, who's a field worker from Supporting Families and Mental Illness. And that's an organisation well known here in Auckland and throughout New Zealand. In Auckland, it's known as SF Auckland. And the SF stands for Supporting Families, but it also stands for Schizophrenia Fellowship, which is quite a coincidence that that SF stands for these two important issues, I guess, around mental health. So this organisation helps family and whānau of all different ages and cultures who may be struggling during the early and later stages of mental illness. One of the overriding messages that we want to get across to our listeners today is that hope and recovery are always on the horizon. And there's lots of agencies out there to help. So welcome, Peter, to Take It From Us. I guess it'd be fair to say that in your own personal experience, you can talk of hope and recovery.
Oh, I certainly can, and thank you for having me here.
Yeah. So how does that introduction sort of sound to you? Does that capture the essence of what we're talking about today?
Yes, it does. I think working with families, well, I've been working with families now or mental health period for probably 20-odd years. My background basically started working with young teenagers with mental health issues. I'm also bipolar myself, so I know what it's like from being inside as a person with a mental illness.
That's inside, not inside the bin, but inside the issue.
Well, I have been inside the mental health bin.
Right.
In earlier years, many years ago, and have developed over the years and basically live recovery every day.
Well, that's a great way to put it, to live recovery every day. I mean, how do you do that? How do you live recovery every day?
You work damn hard at it, to be honest, and you do it with the support of, for my case, with my family.
Right.
I wouldn't be here today without the support and knowledge of my family.
Mm.
And that's why I do this job, really, is so to give something back to them, because I know the grief they've gone through and what they've had to work through with me over these years.
So you've been through it personally. I mean, how does it help to have been through it personally and then be out there helping families?
Well, I think for families, I can explain to them what it's like for the person they're supporting sometimes, where I know what it feels like to not be able to pick up that telephone because you're just too anxious to, or not to talk to people, or not want to get out of bed, or having suicidal thoughts and what you need from your family and where you need your family to do or not do in a lot of cases. Sometimes it's just good doing nothing.
So that can be quite a crucial issue, not doing anything. I mean, one of the important things is to not to take control away from the person with the illness.
Exactly. It's and I will talk in my own personal case here because everybody's different and every family's different. In some cases, for me, it was just needed to be left alone or treated normally. Not conversations ending when you walk in the room and you get these feelings. Having things talked openly in front of you so that you don't feel like you're sick.
So you're included.
You're included. Hmm. And generally, families are very caring. They want to love. In fact, they nearly over-love, and sometimes they disempower us.
Right. And how does disempowering someone rate in terms of holding back the recovery?
It rates highly, very, very highly in a lot of cases. And I call it sort of discrimination of love in a strange sort of way. That's my...
Well, that's an amazing description, actually, discrimination of love. I mean, one of the like-mind surveys going back a few years now actually showed that families can be and are, in fact, the most discriminatory against their family members, which is a terrible indictment. But perhaps sometimes families just don't realise that they are disempowering the people and trying to do the best that they know.
And that's it. Families are trying their best. And a lot of the thing is that they don't have the tools or the knowledge to really help themselves or the person they're supporting. And that is extremely important. As I've said an analogy many times, is that, you know, it's the airline thing. If you don't put the oxygen mask over yourself, you can't help anybody else. So it's a case of make sure as a family you looked after yourself, body and soul, then you're going to have some reserves to help look after that person you're supporting as well, because many of our families do get ill.
So that's a reality then, that they don't look after themselves. They put a lot of effort into the loved one, maybe too much effort, try and control the situation, and then they get unwell themselves. And what happens then?
Well, then we have families with depression. We have marital breakdowns. Maybe one member of the family takes over the role of caring, especially in a partnership where mum might take over the role of being the support person, and then they find her marriage breaks down, the relationship breaks down, the whole family breaks down. It is understanding where you're at, and that's what SF's about. It's giving you that information, support, putting you onto the right agencies that can help you. Might be telling you to say no sometimes as well.
So there's actually a very, very good booklet that has come out and stimulated this program today, and that was put out by the Mental Health Commission. It's called When Someone You Care About Has Mental Health or Addictions Problems. Let's just read that again. When Someone You Care About Has Mental Health or Addictions Problems. And its subtitle is that it's a guide for family, whānau and friends. And this booklet is available from Supporting Families and Mental Illness. I'll just pass over to Peter to explain exactly how you can access that, because I think you've got copies available at Supporting Families. And whereabouts are you, Peter?
Well, Supporting Families, we're based right throughout New Zealand. We have 21 odd branches throughout New Zealand. You can look us up on our website, which I always forget, which is just www.supportingfamilies.org.nz. On that we have information, support, how to contact your local branch.
And I think you also have an 0800 number as well, which we talked about when we talked to Emma. But look, I'll let Peter find that 0800 number as we go through the interview. But this booklet is an absolutely valuable resource for families and whānau. And it starts off with some very good introductory information and some definitions about what we mean by family and whānau. And then we move on to the first signs that something may not be right. And is that the time that you get called into a family often, Peter?
Yes, it is. And quite often it's just when the family might suspect that something's not quite right, or they've had a diagnosis from the doctor, or their loved one's gone into a crisis and might be in hospital.
Those first signs, I guess sometimes there's a reluctance by the person who is experiencing the mental health or addictions problem. There may be some reluctance for them to talk to their families. They may choose to want to talk to somebody else. So what happens in that sort of circumstance?
Well, that's when the family needs to understand that and not feel offended. Especially with young people, they want to talk with their peers. When it's myself, for example, I didn't want to talk with my family. I would talk with other people. So, and quite often it might be about your family and you don't want to express all these feelings. So they do need to talk to somebody. So if there is that issue, you start with your doctor or friend or whoever you can get to talk to open the doors.
So the GP, I mean, they are now the front line of mental health, aren't they? And the GP is a good starting place.
That's the first place to start. If you have a mental health issue, or you suspect you have, or you're depressed, or things just aren't working the same, start with the GP.
Right.
Then they can refer you through to the appropriate help.
Now, you just mentioned in your own personal experience that talking to your family, are you talking about your immediate family, or are you talking when you were much younger and you were living with your parents?
All of the above, really. quite often you just don't want to. I mean, personally, I had trouble engaging with anybody within my family because I think, for me, I felt maybe I was showing a weakness, or you are judged maybe. You don't want to be judged. You want to go to somebody that can listen without judgment, you know, and may have been there before.
So us blokes, I mean, we're sort of perceived to be the providers, and sometimes when we fall over, then we can't be that provider, can we? And that can have a fairly devastating effect on our self-esteem and self-confidence. So that's why we choose sometimes as blokes to maybe go somewhere else.
Well, particularly with men, we get that loss of mana. In the family, you might be, you know, a lot of mental illness may start from a whole range of different stresses. It could be the loss of a job, loss of status as well, which is a huge thing for men. Numerous things can bring it on. So you need to talk with somebody, but you can't do it within your family because you might be what you consider the father figure.
Right. Well, let's take a break, and we're going to play a track from Gareth Edwards called Psychiatric Blues, which we've played regularly on Take It From Us.
Woke up this morning, felt druggy in my head, rolled over my side and I fell out of my bed. Oh, does this keep happening to me? I don't need no help in my sleeping, good Lord, no, just a sniff and a cup of chamomile tea. I'm being kept on this here ward. I tell you, man, I ain't never been so bored. Oh, why is this still happening to me? There ain't nothing for me to do around here. Just sit in that chair, rolling up a cigarette, drink some coffee, watch the mind-numbing, soul-destroying daytime TV. Now don't go talking about them crazy drugs. I've had every kind, even the ones they give to thugs. Oh, I. Are they still doing this to me? I like to take a spiff, some magic mushrooms, some ecstasy, and a little bit of LSD.
Mm-hmm.
I've got those psychiatric blues from my head down to my shoes. They're calling me names I don't even know. Till I make those names mine, well, they won't let this poor boy go. Oh, why? Are they still doing this to me? I'm so much more than a tick in the box. I'm more than a label. Why can't they see that in me and let me be? Blues from my head down to my shoes, but they took away my laces.
And nothing worse than losing your laces when you're in hospital. This is Take It From Us, your host Sheldon Brown, and we're talking to Peter Grace, a field worker from Supporting Families in Mental Illness, known in the shortened version as SF Auckland. And one of the major coincidences of Take It From Us addressing the issue of family and whānau is that on Thursday, the Regional Consumer Network is having its November forum, and guess what the subject is going to be? Well, it's supporting families, families and whānau, and in fact, the general manager of Supporting Families and Mental Illness, Emma Dore, is going to be there, and Lee Murray, the family advisor of Auckland District Health Board. So they're going to be discussing families and whānau. Consumers are welcome at the Western Springs Garden Community Hall between 10:30 and 12, and service providers between 12 and 2. And that's at 956 Great North Road, Western Springs. So, Peter, that's quite a coincidence that that initiative should be happening just 2 days from our broadcast.
Oh, we planned it that way.
Oh, well. Yeah. You mean things not are really planned in mental health?
No, not really. We react.
Right. Yeah, no, well, Peter also is happy to take any calls from family members or those who are experiencing mental health or addictions problems, and you can call us here in the studio on 815-8100. So Peter is happy to take any inquiry, any suggestions, any experiences. The number here is 815-8100. So that's the Planet FM studio, and we are currently live on Take It From Us. So we just touched on the issue of younger people, Peter, but I guess the issue of the latest drugs, P and ecstasy, some of the others, psychosis, drug-induced psychosis, that sort of thing's becoming an issue that is challenging families.
That's becoming quite prevalent, especially with a lot of people that we're working with at the moment. It's a serious thing because you're getting healthy young people between sort of that age of 18 and their early 20s who are going forward, then they get a drug-induced psychosis. Now, that the grief that's involved for that for a lot of families, where they're getting their beautiful young person all of a sudden destroyed and sitting in a mental health unit somewhere, as well as the young person who's going through the psychosis, the whole family is in crisis. In many cases, you know, it doesn't discriminate.
No. So can you talk us through some of the detail there? I mean, without mentioning particular cases, but could you talk us through just how traumatic it might be for both parties?
Well, for both parties, the person who's maybe experiencing the psychosis, they've generally got a lot of help. You know, they've got psychologists and social workers and everybody else there helping them, working through their recovery with their medication. But quite frequently it's the family who it's sitting at home wondering is, what have I done wrong? Why is my kid on drugs? Why has he now got the psychosis and doesn't want to talk to me or doing strange things? Yeah. They may have experienced something that he's reacted at home and done things. It's also affecting their young children. And as I said, it doesn't discriminate wealth, poor, wherever. And it can be very, very destroying to the family. So they need that support. That's when they need to understand what they can do to help, what they can do to help themselves.
So to help me understand this, I mean, can this sort of drug-induced psychosis happen very quickly, or is it something that has been building up over a period of time and a period of use of some of these more dangerous drugs?
Well, generally from my observations is that there has been a little bit of a drug history going on before here, but how it comes about, I don't think we seem to know. Just some people are more prevalent to it than others. So you could have the same group of people taking the same drugs, and one person out of them may get a drug-induced psychosis. I'm not a doctor or a psychologist in that things. Most of my work comes from observation and a bit of time at university, but observations are that it's just sort of Russian roulette, I'm afraid.
So what would you say to a parent who rings up and says something like, well, my 18-year-old is in Taharoto critical care unit. It's all been very shocking, very immediate. There was no warning. What would be the first thing that you might say to them?
Well, the first thing I would say, I would probably just listen to them to start with. It's not about what I say, it's what they need to say. They need to express what they're feeling. Most people will talk about, you know, why has it happened, what's been going on. They need to sort of get out their feelings, their grief, that anger, frustration. They blame the boys or girls' friends. They blame everybody. And then they blame themselves an awful lot as well. So we need to turn around and say, hey, you're not the one that's taken that drug. You're not the one who's put yourself in this position. You are mum and you love them, and your job is to support them.
So I mean, the reality is that the loved ones, the parents or the caregivers are faced with having to go into a critical psychiatric unit, probably something that they've never done before. And that's always pretty frightening, really, because some of these places aren't, they're not exactly five-star hotels.
Yeah, five-star would be, a dream. But, yeah, for the families, that is part of the journey. It is traumatic because these are just all normal, everyday families. They've been going to work, going to school, never had any issues, and all of a sudden their world's upside down. It is like a death for a lot of families. I relate it to that same feeling because what all of a sudden, if the psychosis doesn't look like a child or person's going to recover that well, but a lot of families, they go through that whole grief process because what they've done is they've lost that potential with that person. They may have lost that, that trust and everything. A lot of things have lost that you need to work through and gain back. And you've got to look at yourself and what you've been doing and what you can do to look after yourself. And it is about the families looking after themselves, as I've said, every time, make themselves strong so they can look after their loved one.
So, I mean, there was a hint in what you said there that perhaps recovery from something like this is not going to be as rapid, perhaps. I guess this is the most extreme sort of case that we could talk about, isn't it?
I think the fact that drug-induced psychosis is something that we're just seeing a lot more of. And when you say extreme, well, a lot of mental illness is very extreme, but it's been there for many years for some people. I think it's because it is sudden. It's out of the blue is why it hits people. There's no sort of lead-in to it. There's no sort of slow thing. One day they're sort of doing some crazy things. And, you know, the world's turned upside down suddenly, and that is the difference. And part of their recovery is, I mean, research has shown that family support in any mental illness aids recovery. Having your family help you through, whether it be schizophrenia, bipolar, drug-induced psychosis, is proven that support will help you get to those appointments. Make sure you turn up when you're meant to. Just have people that love you unconditionally, and that's what's needed.
What about the element of being tolerant and patient? I mean, you did say that parents might be looking to blame the friends of their son or daughter, or blame themselves, blame everybody. But it sounds to me as though being a little tolerant, being a little patient with the medical process, with the person being in hospital, and just taking a deep breath, maybe, is that a good approach?
Well, stepping back sometime is a very good thing, so you can revisit what's going on, get your breath, look at the whole picture, not just take little snapshots. It's also needing to know those questions to ask. I think part of the problem for a lot of families is they don't know the questions to ask. That's where SF can come in. You know, we can help with sort of going through that whole process. They can look up our website or get brochures or information. We have quite an extensive library that's been accumulated over the last 35 years. Mm. So there's all sorts of information there, lots of people with different experiences. And that's really where you need to go with it, I think. It's a learning process for each person, each family.
And, I mean, of course, today with the interweb, just Google, I would think probably drug-induced psychosis, and you'd probably get more than enough information on Google. I mean, sometimes we have to be a little bit careful about the reliability of some of the information on the internet, but, you know, I think it's always a very good place to start, and as long as we're selective about the information that we glean from there, then I think we can really step up our own knowledge and information.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Getting that information, reading the internet, having a good knowledge, but not turning yourself into a doctor or thinking you know all the answers. Quite often, recovery and mental health is not technically complicated. It's emotionally complicated, because some things you may have to stop. You're going to have to feel some pains. You've got to do simple things. You've got to stop and look at yourself, and I'm talking about families here. They've got to look at themselves and what they need to do to look after themselves to help the other one. It might be getting down to the basics again, as we say, body and mind. You know, sleeping well, walking, exercise, eating well.
Adopting some self-help techniques, maybe a little bit of meditation or a bit more exercise or walking. They reckon walking's the best antidepressant there is.
Well, yeah, it was for me. I used to walk for miles, then I started running, and I think the exercise is one of the biggest things that actually saved me.
Right. Yeah, well, I think that's all great stuff. And, of course, one of the other things, I guess, is that it's self-responsibility in terms of recovery, isn't it? We can't force people to do things that maybe they're not well enough to do, or they just don't recognise the importance of it at the time. So, I mean, we're all responsible for our own physical and mental health.
Yeah, we are. And I think when you have a mental health issue, quite often you don't think you've got one. I'm fine, it's the rest of the world that's shot. you know, they're all nuts out there, I'm good. Because that's how I was a bit. probably still am a bit, actually.
Well, it's a pretty safe position to take, isn't it?
It is, but the rest of the world doesn't agree with you is the problem. And getting that understanding, I always go back to people and say, well, it's very difficult to help somebody. You can't help a person who's an alcoholic till they admit that they're an alcoholic. And in mental health, we do have a lot of people who are on that marginal line, and therefore, for the families, it is very, very difficult. They don't have any information. One of the biggest aspects that causes problems for family is that if the person doesn't want to divulge information or has stopped the medical side, the doctor's actually releasing information to them. That's where there can be a lot of grief, because they don't know. They've got this mother, father, brother, sister, whatever, with a mental health issue, but they don't know what they're looking at. It's, you need to, for some families, they need to put a name to it. You know, if you're ill, you want to know you've got a cold, or you've got the flu, or you've got diabetes, and it's very difficult when you can't put a name to something because you don't know how to fix it.
So having that diagnosis is a place to start for families. I mean, they can start doing their research. They can come to supporting families. You've got any number of information brochures there and sources of help and places that you could suggest as resources.
Yes, we have a huge range. We work with all the other NGOs. We're more than happy to refer through. Two-thirds of our role is referring to an agency that might be more suitable.
Right.
Could be counselling, it could be relationship counselling, it could be peer support groups, numerous different things we run ourselves as well.
So there's a lot of help out there.
There is a lot of help, but you've got to put your hand up and you do have to ask. Like everything else, you need to be making yourself available for it and accepting it. For a lot of families, I mean, they are in grief, especially if they're not getting information. But they can give information. You're entitled to give information back to the doctors about what's going on with your family. You're allowed to have relevant information, even if you don't know a diagnosis.
Well, Peter is taking calls on Take It From Us today, 815-8100, if anybody would like to call and just make a suggestion or talk about their own experiences or ask where they might go for help. So that's 815-8100. Let's take another track, and we've got a track that we haven't played on Take It From Us, but it was, I think, provided by the Human Rights Commission.
I got no cash in my pocket, no greens in my wallet. Everything I got, I see the barber that they stalling. Yep, that's right, it's not a secret I'm on. The last chick I was with left me broke. Left me all alone, one over has to go. The landlord beside kicked me out on the road. And now I'm standing on the street, no money, no hope. No pillow, no blanket, no bed, no home. God damn, I flat out with the cash. Then my mama knew she probably whooped me bad. Then my old man, then a whole fan bands. Like, oopsie daisy, I ain't ready for all of that. But for now, I'ma just imagine. Pretend to myself that none of this is happening. Act like I got money living in a mansion. Instead of looking like a homeless eating garbage.
Let me try to tell you, get the money. Still no money in my pocket, but all my love's for you.
Yeah. Well, guess what? I'm back in the game. The paper Jamie made, now I'm flossing the game. It's an everyday thing, I'm gonna let my chain hang. Throw my money in the urn, I'm about to make it rain. Yep, to that chick that let me brought the phone. Now I'm on top of the world, now you're knocking on my front door. Saying that you love me once more. Well, it's kinda funny how you say you love me. But when I had no cash, you let me fall with dummy. Now you call it back because I got a little bit of money. Ha ha, make me laugh looking at ya. If I was you, get your face out of my picture. Well, I got enough to make my own profit. So baby, girl, just stop it and fall off the top of it. Because bad is just gonna say, you got what bad.
I got no money in my pocket.
I am just so lit. Wife, I lay my own wing up. I lay the road to the
just can't get no love, no love. Out in the streets, no love.
Well, a nice bit of violin work there on a track called No Money in My Pocket. I bet we can all relate to that. And we're on Take It From Us today. Your host, Sheldon Brown, and we're talking to Peter Grace, who's a field worker from Supporting Families and Mental Illness. And Peter was touching on the issue, I guess, when loved ones go into an acute unit. But before we get on to that, we've got one or two community notices. Just to mention that the Hearing Voices Network Support Group is meeting on the North Shore now. It's held at Connect Supporting Recovery, which is 215 Wairau Road, Glenfield. And that's every Thursday. So if you want any details about times and that sort of thing and who's attending, you could get on to the Hearing Voices website at hearingvoices.org.nz. We've also got a lot of interest in the Framework Touch Tournament coming up, which is Wednesday week, November the 24th, kicking off at Cox's Bay Reserve in Westmere. A lot of teams are registering and the money is coming in. So get your registration into Junior Tier. That's junior.tier@framework.org.nz. We'd like those registrations in by November the 19th. So that's the Framework Cup Fun Touch Tournament, which is Wednesday the 24th of November, Cox's Bay Reserve in Westmere. And there's some good news for people wanting to attend the National Disability Conference, which is going to be held on Monday the 6th of December at Waipuna Hotel and Conference Centre. Good news for parents and families, and that's the subject of Take It From Us today. You can attend. Parents of children with disabilities and the family members of disabled people can now register together as a family by paying only $40 for the entire family. And so get along to that conference Monday the 6th of December at Waipuna Hotel and Conference Centre in Auckland. And I just want to mention the Regional Consumer Network Forum, which is coming up this Thursday, which is the 18th of November. It's at the Western Springs Garden Community Hall, 956 Great North Road, Western Springs. And our guest today, Peter, his boss, Emma Dore, is going to be speaking from Supporting Families, and there's going to be Lee Murray, who is the family advisor with the Auckland District Health Board. And the theme is families and whānau, and that's exactly what we're talking about on Take It From Us today. So, Peter, you touched on the fact that, you know, families are probably in a degree of shock and grief. They've got a loved one who may have ended up in an acute unit. What do families do about talking to professionals? I mean, sometimes we treat professionals as sort of being almost unavailable, up there, almost close to the hand of God. You know, it's sometimes challenging to approach a specialist, psychiatrist, somebody like that, to find out what's going on. What's the advice there?
Well, part of our role is to help with family meetings in these units as well, so we can help coordinate, sit there and ask those questions you may not know to ask, or else we can give you information to ask the questions. Also with families, if the person, family member, refuses to give consent for the professionals to pass on information, that can make it very difficult. But you're still entitled to education, information about the mental illness in general, strategies for coping. We put out a leaflet called Code of Family Rights through ECF, which explains all the steps you can go through, the support you can have, what's needed. But you need to be listened to. I think for families, they want to be listened to by the health professionals, because they are the one that know that person. And respected. And that's also a part of our role, is to make sure that their voice is heard. with the professionals.
So listening in mental health is such an important aspect, really, isn't it? Sometimes we get sort of talked at by these professionals without, you know, being able to express our grief and express our concerns and fears and that sort of thing. So what's the simple answer there?
Well, I mean, really, it is sometimes for the health professionals just to give you that time to talk. And that can also be part of our role in these family meetings, is to maybe make that space or ask the relevant questions. It can be very new for some families. And then there's other families been doing this for 30 years and they're old hands. Mm. And for them, sometimes they're the experts in their own mind.
Right.
And then sometimes I've got to tell them to sort of be quiet and listen because there's new information. Because we get stuck in the old treadmill. I've been doing this for 20 years and this is what works. Well, you know, there's new medications, there's new strategies, finding new ways.
Right. And
works both ways.
And new resources in the community where people can access these community resources. And you mentioned the NGOs. Of course, they are the non-government organisations. And I work for Framework, and they do a tremendous amount out in the community with their community support workers, community living service, the personal focus, which runs fitness and wellbeing and computer courses and helping people to get a driver's license. We also have Work Focus, which helps people get into jobs, support them in the job when they're there. So, you know, there are a lot of community assets out there. We also have a very good, excellent woodworking school where people can build up their skills. And, you know, it provides a structure in one's day, particularly at a time of crisis when maybe life has changed dramatically.
Yeah, and just what you've said is fantastic. The resources out there for the person with the mental illness, is there's many resources. But for the family member, mum sitting at home, or dad, or brother, or sister, husband and wife, they're the ones that are still sitting there. There are resources. They've got to know what's out there for themselves, what they can get out and do to empower themselves in life as well. Because they spend a lot of their time caring for somebody, they forget to care for themselves. And that's our role sometimes too, and empower them with information, what they can get out and do, maybe just be that ear for them to listen to as well.
Mm. Do you think there's any sort of, well, I guess universal is not the right word, but, you know, in terms of self-help, what do you think, I guess we covered exercise, didn't we, as a self-help tool, and it sounds as though exercise has been one that's been incredibly important for you. It's certainly been very, very important for me and my mental health. So would that be the sort of the first development, if people, families, parents weren't exercising, maybe get out and have a bit of a walk together?
Well, yeah, I believe in going for a walk or exercising, but it's looking after yourself. It's taking time for yourself. It might be for some people soaking in the bath. It could be reading a good book. It's about self-care where families are concerned, because they're giving all the time, they forget to actually do something for themselves.
Mm.
It could be go out with friends and have a cup of coffee and have some time out. But exercise, food, that goes regardless of whether you've got mental health issues or not. I think it's just, you know, the way we have to be these days.
Yeah. Does supporting families organise any sort of network meetings for parents or family members so that they can get together, have a coffee together, share some experiences?
We run regular support groups across Auckland on a regular basis. They run sort of sometimes twice a month, sometimes once a month, depending on the area in the group. We generally try to have guest speakers, and sometimes we just have time chatting, but it is for the families to support each other, talk about their journeys. We may have people in these groups that have been, as I say, going through this for 30-odd years. Then we have other people who this is their first introduction to living with somebody with a mental illness.
Mm.
And amazing the knowledge they can gain from listening to some of the older hands.
Well, we've had parents on the show, Take It From Us, mostly to mark Schizophrenia Awareness Week, because Schizophrenia Fellowship was the original name of what is now called Supporting Families. And we've had parents just endorsing how wonderful the work of Supporting Families is and how connection with supporting families and their field workers has turned situations around for them and given them a great understanding that, well, they're not alone in this problem. And that's one of the things too, isn't it? That, you know, there are a lot of people having to cope with this issue.
Well, social isolation is one of the big things. I have families who don't talk to anyone, don't talk to their extended family. So they're carrying all this grief, all this anger, uncertainty by themselves. And being able to express it and talk to some other people and, well, as I say, it's getting rid of that internal stigma you carry. Mm. Or shame, I suppose, for some families nearly feel that way, that they can't talk to their own family or friends. So they start to lose friends. They start to isolate themselves and all they do is look after their family member.
So that becomes a sort of a vicious spiral, really, doesn't it? They're not looking after themselves, they're not having that social contact, and they're shamed about what is happening, and I suppose they sort of withdraw into themselves and have a little bit of a crawl sort of mentality, really.
Well, they do, and a lot of families blame themselves for some reason, but it's not their fault.
Right.
You know, it's circumstances, it's life. They have to understand that they have done nothing personally, well, 99% of cases anyway, to cause this problem.
Right. Well, let's take another music break, and we've got this very lovely track from Trims, who is seen sometimes at Clubhouse Crossroads, which is an adult mental health facility down very close to supporting families, actually, in Great North Road. This is Take It From Us, your host Sheldon Brown, and we're talking to Peter Grace, a field worker at supporting families in mental illness. And Peter, you touched on an issue that I was very surprised actually to hear about, the sort of incidents of elderly parents that for a long time, I guess, have been mollycoddling their loved ones. And the loved ones may now be very adult themselves, perhaps even in their 40s or 50s. What are the circumstances here?
Well, I actually find that a really sad circumstance for a lot of these families, because the resources maybe weren't out there 30, 40 years ago, and they've been looking after their child for a better part of their life, really. And now they're in their 70s and 80s and looking at retiring or need to retire. They can't do the job anymore. They're looking for places for their family member to go and live. And it's becoming more prevalent, I suppose, with the baby boomer group. That's me.
And me.
Yeah, so we're in there anyway. So, you know, it's talking to these families and empowering them to say that, okay, well, now it's time for you to have a rest. You know, you've done your job. It's now time to sort of empower them to say, okay, well, let's look at how you can move forward and get your family member living somewhere else independently set up before the inevitable happens, which happens to all of us. And in those things, it may be looking at things like getting enduring power of attorneys, making sure their wills are up to date. And when I say enduring power of attorneys, it's also for the family members as well as the person with the mental illness. Making sure all those sort of things are tidy. Part of our role is to say, you know, how are they looking? Where are you at with that situation? And then say, talk to your lawyer or public trust or whoever may be available. There are things that all families should do in that respect, because you never know when it's going to happen. And if you've got those enduring power of attorneys in place, it means things can be looked after. Your bills can be paid, everything can flow, so there's less stress on your whole family. So that's another wee role we have as well, is sort of making sure and just looking at things like that and letting people know and giving them information to go forward and do those things. And it's giving them the strength and the knowledge to say, okay, it's time to move.
Because, I mean, I guess the image I have here is that this person who has been mollycoddled or, and that's a bit of an unkind term perhaps, but looked after by these elderly parents is likely to be one of those people where control has been taken away. There's a bit of a disempowerment and that person is probably very vulnerable if there is no will or power of attorney protecting them.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that is one of the issues. And, I mean, especially with the older generation, some people haven't done these things. They just think that sort of things will flow on. So it's being prepared. Being prepared for the person with the mental illness. It's also getting that person out there while the family's still there to help and assist, getting them into independent living or living somewhere with support. But doing it while mum and dad are still around to actually help and be involved, so that when maybe they do pass away, that, you know, they can live a good, full life. And quite often people will blossom after that as well. So, you know, it's never too late.
Right. Oh, well, and certainly we hope that we have engendered a feeling that there is always hope and recovery around the corner or on the horizon. But I just want to go back to your very good airline analogy, Peter, because I think it's absolutely wonderful way of capturing advice to families, and that was that you put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help someone else. What do you really mean by that, just to reinforce that message again?
Well, it's self-care again, looking after yourself, making sure you're mentally and emotionally and physically healthy to be able to help others. You know, it is super important, especially when you're doing that support role.
And, I mean, you've talked about it being a grieving process and you know, almost, I guess, as serious as a loved one dying. So, I mean, we do need to look after ourselves.
Well, you do. And I think if it takes time to go and see counselling yourself, you know, quite often to counselling, see your GP, you might need some help with sleeping, or there might be depression or anxiety involved, which is quite normal now under any stress. So it's asking help, it's asking questions, it's listening, it's inquiring, getting information, getting as much support as you can around yourself and your family member, mm-hmm. and then just seeing what you need to, you know, get you strong and empower yourself to make those healthy decisions.
Yeah. Now, supporting families is not very far away from our studio here. It's in Great North Road. Do you know the number offhand? It's 423 Great North Road, I think, is it?
It is, but I actually work in the Glenfield office, I'm
right.
Sure.
Okay, what's your address in Glenfield office?
We're at the Glenfield Community Centre, the corner of Bentley and Glenfield Roads.
Right. So. And did we find that 0800 number...
Well, I did find it, yeah.
Great.
It's just 0800 SEF Auckland or 09-378-9134 if you're local.
Okay. Well, let's just remind our listeners that the Framework Cup Fun Touch Tournament is on Wednesday, the 24th of November, so we've got just over a week to go. Coxes Bay Reserve, Westmere, it's $45 a team. We really look forward to you being there on the 24th of November. It's kick-off at about 9:30, and we're incorporating both the tournament and the presentation ceremony with the trophies and the certificates and the medals all on the one day. So that's going to be a big ask for those of us who are organising this event. And we very much appreciate the support of the Auckland City Council, the Mental Health Foundation, Youth Town has had an involvement, and the Out of the Blue Depression campaign as well. So this has been Take It From Us. We look forward to having you on listening again next Tuesday at 12:30, and thank you, Peter, for your contribution.
Thank you for having me. And it seems-